Welcome to the Moose Room, everybody. The OG3 are here. We're all in the same room. We have one microphone, so who knows what's going to happen. Could be a little interesting to edit later. I guess it's not my problem. Is it my problem? I don't know.
I think this one's going to be your problem.
Okay, well, we'll figure it out in a little bit. Today, we are talking about culture, farm culture, and how we set the tone. There's going to be a couple different ways we talk about this. We can go from a professional services perspective as a veterinarian visiting farms. We've got a farm manager in Dr. Bradley J. Hines, tenured professor. And we have Emily here, who grew up on a farm, probably was a little brainwashed into helping, but she did help anyway. And we can talk about it from that perspective as well. So lots to talk about today. Emily, it's her idea. So let's let her start.
Yes. Well, we have talked about culture on this podcast before, really in terms of safety. And that's how I really think about it. But I think the idea today is to just really expand that conversation a little bit more. So as a reminder, culture in its kind of simplest definition is a group of people that share values and beliefs around something. So a culture can appear, you know, in ethnic terms, geographic terms, communities of interest, communities of practice, right? Like all different things have culture, right? Like there's a Midwest culture for those of us who live here, you know, AKA OAP or how are you? I'm fine. That's all Midwest culture, right? And then, you know, our families may have our own cultures or like the communities we're a part of, right? I grew up in a small town in South Central Minnesota, a very heavy agricultural town. So a lot of our culture there is around ag and farming, right? Things are strategically planned in the community around planting and harvest because that's what influences our community first and foremost. So that's just kind of a brief overview. Again, culture is, you know, a group of people with a shared belief and value system. And so that culture and those values and beliefs are really what we build on and what we see. And some people may say to me, well, we don't have a culture. We don't really focus on that. Even if you haven't been building one intentionally, there is a culture, right? Cultures build on their own, whether, again, we are intentionally doing it or not. So yeah, we see culture show up in a lot of different ways. And Joe kind of came up with a good idea, like he said at the intro, kind of looking at culture on farms from a few different perspectives, you know, a service provider perspective, a manager type perspective, and a lived experience perspective, we will call it. And I will say, you know, when I think of culture, I do really think of it as, you know, kind of an employment and a management type piece, maybe not quite total HR, but it's typically the person in charge who is really responsible for what that culture is going to be. The people that you surround yourself with and that you are associated with also do help shape that culture. But again, if you are the manager on your farm, especially, people look to you for leadership, including for what those beliefs and values and attitudes should be. So I do kind of want to hear from Bradley first, kind of about the culture that is at the Morris Dairy. And I'm pretty sure when we discussed this previously, we talked about it a little bit, but I don't remember what you said. So it'll be brand new.
Well, it's interesting because the culture was very different when I got there. So you know, when I was there, it was like, oh, now there's this new young buck guy in charge trying to change everything. And, you know, the biggest thing I heard was, well, we don't do that here a lot. And so you really have to try and build that trust, build that rapport with all the employees as a sort of manager. I'm the sort of supervisor of the dairy. So you have to, you know, make sure that everybody's going to be part of this. So it took a while, you know, I made a lot of changes from even just management wise, even trying to do research studies. You know, I was out moving cows just so they felt like I understood what it was like to actually physically do it so I could try and help improve the efficiencies. You know, one of the biggest things that I think about from a buy-in perspective was when I put precision technologies for heat detection on the dairy. And, you know, this was 10 plus years ago and everybody was skeptical. You know, we had bred with patches for a long time. We were so used to visual heat detection. And now you come in and put this new system in, and I got a lot of pushback after a while. But then once you start working with the employees and helping them with it, working through the issues, now they won't ever go back. You know, they rely on the activity system. Maybe sometimes they rely on the activity system too much now for heat detection, but that's what it is. And so we've built that culture. And, you know, so that's one of the main things that I strive to do, is to really help people in their daily work to make them feel like they're making a difference on our dairy.
So you touched on some important points there, Bradley, but one I kind of want to revisit, and you talked about it a little bit, but can you maybe summarize just a couple of what you think are the core values that kind of shape your culture? So I think technology is one of them, but what are some of the other things you really think about?
One thing that I also think about is milking efficiency, milk quality. You know, that's probably one of the biggest important factors. And I know on this podcast, we talk about milk quality a lot. And that's probably the one biggest issue that we still face challenges with, you know, but trying to build that culture that it's important, you know. And for us, for our organic dairy, you know, we get paid on bacteria counts. You know, some processors don't, but we get paid on LPC, SPC, and PI. So it's very important that we have working equipment and clean conditions and everything's washed, and we don't use all of the hot water for certain things. So it's been a challenge, but trying to show the employees that, you know, this matters. We lose money if we don't have high quality milk. So it's really important. And somatic cell count, you know, that's becoming important. Like many, we've faced challenges over the summer, and I've tried to instill that, you know, it's important. We need to get this somatic cell count not at 400,000. It needs to be at 200,000. And I think they've really helped and strived to do that. And now we sit at about 250,000 here in September. So it's been a challenge, but trying to work every day. And I'm out in the barn. You know, I'm not trying to dictate this from my office. I'm there talking with the milkers, showing them the counts, showing them the quality reports, and talking with them and trying to see how we can improve. So it's really working with your employees and not just making sure that you're kind of a dictator. We don't want to do that.
And that's, I think, one of the most critical pieces of building culture that you mentioned there, Bradley, is that, you know, you are really leading by example. It's not just build this culture because it's what I said. It's build this culture because it's what I'm showing you I want. And I think that's a really important piece of it. And I have a hunch that Joe has maybe seen that, or a lack of that, in the way it plays out on various farms. So Joe, I do want to kind of flip it over to you now and just hear about your perspective on, you know, you are a person, we've all been to a lot of farms. You've probably been to more than me, for sure. I don't know about Bradley. So you've seen a lot, right? We all have. But just talk us through a little bit of, you know, as a service provider, as a veterinarian, when you're on farm, what are the things you kind of notice as it relates to culture? And I would say both good and bad, right? I think it's important to talk about some of the things we can improve on as well.
So yeah, we talk a lot about culture on farms. We have cultures everywhere, like you said earlier, Emily. I'm a big fan of what Brad said earlier. You know, you got to be out in the barn and actually present, and managing from an office or not somewhere on site where your employees can see you and learn from you in real time. And you can actually demonstrate your own knowledge and what you're doing with whatever you'd like them to do. That's way, way better than trying to put signs up or write protocols down. Or, I mean, we need some of those things as well. But at the same time, we can also overcome a lot of miscommunication by just being there in person and showing them exactly how things should be done. And that also overcomes language barriers in a lot of ways as well, right? Just showing someone what to do rather than having them try to read a protocol where it might not even be in the language that they primarily use. So there, you can avoid a lot of miscommunication. I do notice a big change in dairies where there's a manager or an owner that is out there and working and with their employees and making sure that they're on that farm as much as possible and present. So I notice a lot of that. That's a big, big deal. And, you know, we see it in like, this will be interesting from Brad and your perspective as well. Like there's little areas on the dairy where potentially the manager just doesn't like to go, right? Like not everyone likes working with calves, right? And that can be, and it's a different area for everybody, right? But some people stay out of the parlor for whatever reason, because either they don't know quite what to do in there, or one of the toughest situations is when you're short on labor and you know you have good employees, and the last thing you want to do is drive them away to another place where you know they could find work somewhere else, because they are a great employee. So you have, people are scared to provide any criticism or feedback for fear of losing their labor. And then, you know, if you don't like something, like calves, for example, is for whatever reason is the big one, right? Things can drift and go very awry in those areas because the manager just isn't there, because they don't really want to be. To me, that's the biggest thing that doesn't work on farms. If the manager is not present on farm, working with their employees, showing them, not all the time, because you don't have the time to do it, but sometimes you're willing to get dirty and do some of the work, which most managers on farms are going to have to eventually, because someone's going to go on vacation and there's not going to be someone to fill that spot. But I mean, when there is a dairy where a manager isn't willing to do those things and isn't present and they sit in their office, I mean, you notice very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a really good point there, Joe. I'm just going to repeat what you said, you know, and that is, there's a difference between being present and micromanaging. And we are not saying that you need to micromanage, because yes, that is going to turn people away and negatively impact your culture. Because yes, then it's a culture of we get micromanaged here. And we don't want that, but we want the culture to be, we are able to do our work and we know it's important work. And we know if we have issues, we can go to the person in charge, but there's that trust there. So, you know, like Joe said, and yes, for whatever reason, people don't like calves. And I don't want to make sweeping generalizations. It is usually men, not always, but typically in my experience, more men tell me they dislike working with calves than women. So I'm just going to say that. And so you don't have to like calves, but once a day, maybe even every other day, you just pop in there, you know, when you know your employees are feeding, and just, how's everything going? And that's too, where you can ask those questions. How is everything going? Is there anything you need, right? Maybe this bucket broke, or, you know, this whisk we use to stir the calf replacer is losing wires, right? That's where you can check in. And again, you build more of that culture of, we are a team. We want every part of this farm managed well. And although maybe the calves are not my personal favorite, I still show up here, because it's important to the overall function and vitality of the farm. So those were a lot of really great observations on that, Joe, but looks like Brad was kind of itching to say something on that too. So I'll let him take it.
Well, calves are always interesting. You know, everybody talks about calves, and it's one of the things that I struggle with trying to build culture around calves and heifers. You know, that it seems like always an afterthought that, oh man, we got all this other stuff going on, and now we got to go feed calves, or we got to do this. And I keep trying to say that this is the future of our herd. We need to pay attention to this. And, you know, it's also one of the cultures that, so we have the precision technologies, you know, for heat detection, and it's work, and there's a lot of buy-in. I also have an automatic feeder right now, and I still struggle with buy-in from workers with an automatic feeder. It's challenging. They think it's broke all the time. It doesn't work. It, you know, they got to be pushing calves all the time. And so they think it's more work. And so it's been a struggle for me to have employees buy in on an auto feeder. And I know there are other farms out there that struggle with the same thing, trying to get employees to have buy-in with automatic calf feeders. It's a challenge. And if anybody has any good answers, I am willing to listen.
Well, I think the auto feeder discussion brings up a lot of what I see with management as well and culture on a farm. And I think one of the best cultures you can build is a culture of assuming that there's a lot you can control in a situation rather than assuming that there's a lot of things that are out of your control. And I think employees inherently understand that. And people that work with cattle all the time, they understand it. But when you have something kind of complicated like a auto feeder, it's a very easy thing to blame when things are going wrong, right? It's the auto feeder. The auto feeder must be broken. It must be. It's an easy thing to blame because they have the system itself has had problems for a while, you know. But if you think about like, well, what can we control in that situation that allows an auto feeder to be successful? Well, there's a ton that's in your control. Stocking density being the number one. And if we assume the machine is right, which you shouldn't assume it, you should make sure that it is. But let's assume the machine is doing a great job and it's not the machine's fault. What can we do to fix the situation if the machine is working perfectly? Well, if we assume all that, we can still screw a lot of stuff up and there's a lot of stuff in our control, especially when we know that we're controlling the environment so much in that kind of situation. You've got ventilation, cleanliness, everything's in your, and the temperature a lot of times is in your control. Like weather is out of it, which is, you can't control the weather, but it now it's in your control. So I think one of the things that I see that's most successful is if you immediately, when you have a problem, think about all the things that are in your control and truly in your control and how they're all connected. And if you can think of things that way, you avoid this game where you start blaming things and assuming it's out of your control and that you don't have a solution, when in reality, most of it is going to be in your control and it's all going to be management. It's usually not going to be a treatment or a bug in a drug. It's going to be, okay, yes, we're having, you know, this issue, but if I really break it down into what leads to that issue, there's 10, 12 things that are in my control and I need to go check those things. That's how I look at the culture for me on that side. If you're truly management focused and solutions based, you're looking at all those things that are in your control and you're trying to not assume that everything that's going wrong is out of your control.
I would also say that's where sometimes we get a little caught up in, and I was just having this conversation the other day and kind of causes versus symptoms when it comes to problems, right? So like for the automatic calf feeder, right? People say, well, you know, the feeder is the problem. The feeder is the problem, right? Well, is that really the cause of the problem? Or is it a symptom of a larger issue, right? Maybe people weren't properly trained on the feeder. Maybe, you know, the feeder hasn't been cleaned. And so that's why calves are getting sick, if that's the issue. So again, you know, really thinking about, is this the cause of the problem or is it a symptom of what the problem is? Because again, I think a lot of the times we blame things as causes when really they're symptoms. And so we have to dive a little deeper into what are those symptoms telling us? And that includes our culture, right? So, well, the feeder is the is the feeder really the problem or is it a symptom that there's something else that we haven't done or are missing here?
I think that's a good way to think about it, Em, because yeah, I mean, however you want to put the labels on everything, there's so much more in your control than you think, and you want to attack those things that are in your control. And there's so many examples of that throughout this, and we could talk about it all day. We need to get to your perspective, Em, on buy-in from a perspective of a young adult on a farm that grew up there. And how did your parents set it up to where you wanted to help? And my big question is, did you ever know why you were doing things or were you just told to do them and you did them?
Yes. So, you know, we've discussed my background on the podcast at length, but as a quick reminder, I did grow up on a dairy farm with my parents and my four older siblings. So I'm the youngest of five. So I think that's also an important piece to mention because that kind of comes into play with this as well, based on Joe's questions. So, you know, when I think back to the culture on our farm and, you know, specifically I'm thinking of values, you know, and a lot of the values I hold today definitely were the values that we held at our farm, you know, and that's kind of first and foremost family and what's important to the family. And another really important piece of that, and I know I discussed it before, my parents really instilled in us a trust and respect for all living things. That was the number one piece of our culture. If it is alive, it deserves respect. And so that was something that I can remember specifically really being emphasized to us, you know, of like, when you're a kid, like it's fun to carry the farm cats around, but it's like, okay, we don't carry them like that because the cats don't like it. You don't carry it by the tail because that's not respectful to the cat and is painful, right? Like that's a pretty juvenile perspective, but that's just an example, right? And so we learned really early, like we respect all living things and we take care of them because that is also the lot we have chosen, is to be stewards and caretakers of these living things. Plants, animals, and otherwise. Again, that's the one thing I really remember being emphasized. But a lot of how we did things or how I learned things was definitely just because I was the baby. And so I just did what I was told. You know, specifically my brothers, they were just kind of, well, this is how we do it. They might give the why, but it was maybe not a super thorough why, right? But it might be, well, we give, you know, the calves warm milk because they like it better warm, you know, like stuff like that, right? But so there was some of that. And I think definitely as I grew older and got more into an age, and I think a lot of farm kids, especially those who have siblings, can relate, you know, it becomes less I am the assistant to my siblings and more I have the specific things that are mine, especially as siblings grow up and go to college or move off the farm. And so then I became a little more aware of again, just doing things with purpose. What is our purpose for doing it this way? And that is something that I do always give my parents a lot of credit for. They really encouraged us to be lifelong learners, to be curious, and to ask questions. And so that was really the culture on our farm. It's like nobody was smarter than anybody else. Certainly there were people that were a little more in charge, you know, but everybody could still ask why, or everybody could still give an idea. The last piece, when I think about the culture specifically on our farm, and this is something I know I've mentioned, and that is that we had a really strong culture around safety. We talked a lot about safety on our farm. We, you know, talked a lot about what is and isn't dangerous. And, you know, of course, we had a really big visual constant reminder in that my dad lost his leg in a farming accident in the 70s before any of us were born. So that was very much a baked in piece of the culture. But it went beyond just, you know, my dad going, hey, look, I lost my leg. So that's why you have to do this. You know, it was more than that. But that certainly helped, you know, and that was certainly why we had those conversations and certainly why it was so important. Had my dad not had that happen to him, we probably wouldn't have emphasized safety as much as we did. But I'm glad we did, you know, kind of led me to where I am now. But that was how I experienced, you know, culture on our farm growing up. And it's kind of cool to be a professional now who looks at this type of stuff and yeah, to be able to think about it now and share it all with you and go, huh. And now I want to play this episode for my siblings and see where they agree and disagree with me.
Well, I think that why piece is huge. You know, I think as a kid, it's a different role, right? And we, especially in extension, we understand like teaching kids and teaching adults is two very different things. But I think with adults, the why, as you said, when you started to become more responsible as you got older, the why became more and more important. And I think it's one of the key pieces of getting someone to buy in is to say, you know, hey, we prep cows in the parlor this way because if we don't, this, this, and this happens. And if you can connect the dots for them, and especially if it has to do with how much more work they're creating for themselves, or if it is overall success and whether or not they will have a job if the dairy can't survive, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into that, but the why behind why you actually are asking them to do something goes a long way. Brad, have you noticed that on the dairy when you bring in that why and you say, hey, we really need to focus on this because of this? If you explain the why, do you get more buy-in from your perspective?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it. We do. And that's really what I try to instill into all of the employees is, why are we doing this? Because even, you know, Brad has crazy ideas and crazy things that I do quite often. Or look at, you know, I go to farms and I see other ways that people are doing things. And I try to bring it back and say, well, maybe we should try this once. And, you know, it's really, it's trying to explain why we do that, or why am I making this change? And I've tried to do that every single time I do something, to at least get some buy-in, as so it's not just, oh, well, we're doing this because Brad said. I think that's the important thing, is to always make sure the employees are know why you're doing this.
That's a good spot anytime. I mean, we've talked a lot today. Emily's got an episode she needs to share with her siblings, and we'll see how that feedback goes. Maybe they will send some scathing rebuttals to this episode, and that would be actually quite fun. So we'll see. I just want to take a second to say thank you to everybody. This is probably the last episode you hear me on for a while, as I start my new role at Zoetis. So just not possible without you guys listening, which, I mean, we can talk to empty air. We're pretty good at it, but we appreciate you listening, and it does make it more fun when we have all the listener feedback. Definitely a big thank you to Brad and Em for chasing me on this idea that happened 4 years ago now, which is a lot of episodes, because we've been doing this once a week for 260-ish episodes. I don't know where we're at now, honestly. So yeah, just wanted to say thank you. And we'll turn it over to Brad and Em in case they want to say something. But otherwise, again, really appreciate it.
Yes. Well, and I'll give Brad a chance to talk, but I'm sure I speak for both of us, you know, when we wish you the best of luck, Joe. You know, the podcast has been a lot of fun to do with you. I do want to mention, because we have gotten some questions from folks when Joe announced he was leaving, the Moose Room will continue. You know, and we've said that, and I will say it again. So the plan is Brad and I will soldier on. We do plan to have Joe back pretty regularly as a guest. So fear not, you will not be without his dulcet tones forever. We'll still get him back on here every once in a while. So, you know, we're excited to keep it moving forward. And we certainly ask for a little bit of patience from all of our listeners as we make that transition. For those of you who did not know, The contribution Brad and I really make up to this point is just showing up to do the recordings. Joe has been the one in the background doing all of the audio editing, getting everything uploaded online, sharing it on social media, doing all of that piece. And so, Joe, I do want to sincerely thank you for doing all of that, because it has made mine and Brad's job a lot easier. But we're also more than happy to take it on now. But yeah, so just be aware that we're going to continue on. Things are maybe going to be a little rocky as Brad and I climb up this really steep learning curve that Joe has set, because he does such a nice job with this. But yeah, it's been a good time. And people who know me know I'm emotional, so if I go much longer, I'm going to cry. So I think I'm just going to pass the mic over to Brad.
No, it's been a wild ride to think about where we were and how far we've come in 4 years. And I do appreciate Joe being here and providing that perspective that sometimes I don't think about. You know, being a stubborn, hard-headed German, sometimes it's hard to say, no, that's not how you would do it. But I appreciate the perspective that Joe brings, some things that we've never thought about. And I'm really excited for him to come back as a guest, because he knows the correct answers to the questions, and it will only help. So, but no, good luck, Joe, in your future endeavors, and I'm sure we'll be around.
All right. As a reminder for everyone, I'm not leaving or dying. I'm still around.
Yeah.
Okay. Phone number will not change. So you can catch the Moose Room on that same phone number. My cell phone will stay the same. So if you have that, use it. My email will change. So just keep all that in mind. I'm still around. I'm still available if you need me.
All right. Well, I've dried my tears, so we will wrap it there now while I have a minute open. So if you have questions, comments, or scathing rebuttals about today's episode, you can email those to themooseroom@umn.edu. As Joe just mentioned, and as I've forgotten the last several episodes, you can also call and leave us a voicemail, and that number is 612-624-3610. You can find us online on Twitter at @UMNMooseroom. And you can also find us on the web, extension.umn.edu. Finally, as always, find Bradley on Instagram at UMNWCROC Dairy. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.